Hey, everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Hot Lift Eat podcast brought to you by Hot Lift Eat Official. I'm Carter McKenzie here with a new co-host this week, old Justin Everly. What's going on, man?
What's up, dude?
It's kind of like the boys are back together a little bit.
A little bit, man. It's been a while since I got a chance to be on, and I'm stoked to be back.
Yeah, heck yeah. From guest to host to HLECOO.
And now second time host.
Moving on up in the world. Oh, yeah. Well, we're stoked to be talking to our esteemed guest this week. We got Dylan Dowson from Onyx, the one and only, on for this week's episode. So, Dylan, welcome to the podcast, man.
Yeah, no, I appreciate the opportunity to catch up with you guys and chat a little bit. So thank you, guys. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, man. So we were talking a little bit before we mashed record. Dylan, maybe you could tell us again where are you living at and what are your temperatures like right now?
You must cut out a little bit, Carter, because we completely missed that.
Okay. Yeah. Fill us in a little bit. Where are you at and what are your temperatures like now?
Yeah, so I'm in Western Montana. So I'm originally from Eastern Montana and moved out to Western Montana when I started working for Onyx, which is it's crazy to think it's been about 9 years ago. But I've always lived in Montana, born and raised, just on a 9-hour drive, different side of the state now. But it's cold. I mean, we're early mid January, I guess I could say now. Couple days ago, I think we saw negative 40, I think it was 5 or 46 or something with wind chill. So it's a different level of cold. It went from a super mild, no snow, really warm temperatures to, we still don't have all that much snow. We got some that came in that drifted up, but yeah, it was cold for a few days, but I think we're on the back half of it. It's going to warm up from here. And, I'm actually scheduled to go to Texas for an oddad hunt here in a couple weeks. So looking forward to temperatures down there. Even 40 degrees right now is going to feel like a heat wave. Negative 40 to 40 is a big swing.
Yeah, literally 10 minutes before this podcast, I was running outside. I was doing our workout for today, and I was cold and feeling a little sorry for myself. And then I was like, Justin and Dylan got it a little colder, and Justin was out for a ruck yesterday, freezing his face off. So I can't really feel sorry for myself.
Oh man, that was a nice ruck. It was a slight bit chilly, and I had to take the challenge from some of the other guys. Man, they all had frozen stashes and beards, and I figured I wanted to play along too.
Love it.
Well, cool, man. Dylan, tell us a little bit about how you got involved in Onyx and kind of the scope of your role, because Justin and I, along with probably all of our listeners, are huge fans of the app as a whole, man. So how did you get involved?
Yeah, so I, first and foremost, like going all the way back to my childhood, I mean, hunting was always a passion of mine. So like whether I worked in a hunting industry related, role or not, like my thing is hunting. Like I try to stay in shape for hunting season. Like hunting is my, outside of family and religion and other, main aspects of life. But like outside of all that, like hunting is my thing that keeps me moving forward and tries to, keep me constantly on top of my game and wanting to go pursue that. So, I mean, honestly, that in and of itself is kind of what started my career path at Onyx. Is I was a user of the product. And so I've been there, like I said, about 9 years. I actually came in on the ground floor in customer service. So at the time I was the one and only customer service rep. So a lot has changed in the last 9 years. We've got a lot more customers, a lot more employees. When I first started, you knew everybody that you were working with. And now, we've just grown to a point of a company where somebody will walk in the front door of the office and I have no idea if they work there, if they're just visiting. Obviously it's still a pretty tight knit company, but we've got a lot of folks now. So I did customer service for a couple of years and answered anybody's questions as far as updating their chip software for their Garmin GPSs. At the time, the app was out, but it was in its pretty early stages. So I would say at the time, I mean, maybe 15 to 20% of our customers were actually on the app on their phone. As to today, I mean, we don't even offer the chip product anymore. It's solely on the app on the phone. So, yeah, a lot has changed, all for the good. And like I said, I was answering phones and emails for a year and a half to 2 years, and then switched over to the marketing side of things. And as it sits today, I manage all Western big game marketing. So I work a lot with our ambassadors, our relationships throughout the industry, TV personalities, YouTube folks, writers, you name it. So I manage all those relationships, and then also work a lot with just day-to-day marketing for Western big game.
That's awesome, man. And you mentioned briefly, like, going back to the beginning, kind of about your upbringing and how hunting was everything, man. Tell us a little bit more about that. What kind of hunting did you grow up doing, and maybe how'd you get introduced to it?
Yeah, so my dad introduced me to it. I remember like 4 or 5 years old, tagging along with him on almost every hunt from then on forward. So I've got pictures, you know, just super, super young with him and one of his best mule deer, actually his best mule deer he's ever shot. And I was right by his side on opening morning. I actually remember that day like it was yesterday, and I think I was 5 years old. So, you know, it's just part of me growing up was hunting with him. And pretty much, I mean, Montana's cool in the fact that we have so much opportunity here within the state. I mean, it's pretty dang cheap for me to go get, you know, they call it like the sportsman's combo, but elk license, deer license, bear license, turkey, upland, fishing, like everything you need for like the main tags for around $100 a year. So it's ridiculously cheap as a resident. The opportunities are pretty great. I better watch what I'm saying. Otherwise, more people are going to try to move to Montana. We are very full. So no more room for more residents. But I mean, pretty much all throughout the year, like any time of the year, you know, it's January and I could be out hunting wolves or lions right now. So there's always a season. Lots of cool stuff going on. So my point there is, like, for a long time in my life and hunting lifestyle, all I ever hunted was Montana. Started to look into other states and build points probably 5 or 6 years ago, knowing, okay, eventually I'm going to want to hunt some other states, some more opportunities. I really like hunting brand new areas, brand new species, things that I know nothing about. I mean, if I'm going to hunt mule deer or elk in my home state of Montana, like, yeah, you can go to new areas and learn what that herd, what those elk are doing in that area. But I mean, I've done it how many years now? 15, 20 years. So kind of got the ropes under there, and I really like hunting new species, new states. So anyways, I started accumulating points, and then kind of my goal over the past 3 to 4 years is do at least one out-of-state hunt a year. So I've got a young family. I've got two young boys, a 2.5-year-old and one that's 8 or 9 months old. And it's tough to get out and do a ton of hunts, especially in the fall when I've got a busy work schedule and then my own personal hunts as well. But yeah, my goal is to do like one out of state hunt a year at least. So it's been cool. It's been really fun and rewarding to go check out some new states and new opportunities lately.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. That's, you know, we have a lot in common there. I have the same goal. I want to budget enough money to go on one out of state hunt a year. That's the ultimate goal every fall. I got a 3-year-old and a 1-year-old, two girls, and, you know, a lot of parallels there. And, you know, we talked about our shared buddy, Tyler Jensen, shout out to Big Sky Ty. You know, you mentioned building points in other states, and the cool thing about, where you live, Arkansas, is that it's so big, you know, you can go hunt new areas, like you were mentioning, you know, not to blow up your spot, but you can go hunt new areas and go see new things. And I try to convince Tyler to come hunt other Western states every year. And he's like, no offense, dude, but I don't have to, right? There's so much opportunity and the hunting's so good, man. And, you know, with block management and state land and so much public land, there's a ton of opportunity there. So it's, you know, really phenomenal place to grow up. I'm envious of that background a little bit, man.
Yeah, no, I have to remind myself, you know, it's one of those things when you're surrounded by it your whole life, you kind of forget how good you have it. And then when you do talk to some other folks, and it's easy to look on the, man, I wish I lived there because of all that opportunity. Like I work, we're out in Canada right now. So we released the product up in Canada last year. And, you know, I'm talking to folks that live up north in BC and they're hunting sheep every year, mountain goats every year. And to me, that's like a dream hunt that maybe if I get lucky someday, I might be able to make happen once, right? They get to do it every single year. So it's easy to look on the other side of the fence and see it greener and be like, man, I wish I could hunt sheep as a resident, or I wish I could hunt, you know, big giant Alaskan moose if I was a resident. But, you know, you definitely realize, especially talking with other folks, that, you know, they can only hunt certain states, even residents, you know, you can't hunt elk every year. You can't hunt deer, mule deer every year. So if I really stop and think about it, super blessed and fortunate, but, it's crazy when you're in the same spot all your life, it's like, yeah, it's just kind of what you do. You know, you don't really realize how cool of an opportunity it actually is.
Yeah. What a blessing to work for a company that understands a passion for hunting. You know, I feel like not everybody gets that opportunity where you get to take off time during the fall to go, chase whatever critter you're chasing. So that's gotta be pretty sweet.
Yeah, no, it really is. And I mean, honestly, a lot of these cool opportunities I've done through work, which is crazy. I mean, if you would have asked me 10, 15 years ago, if I could ever see myself like Kodiak, Alaska, for example, I went there on a work hunt, right? We went and hunted blacktail on Kodiak. And I mean, if I were to ask myself 10 to 15 years ago, would you ever see yourself getting paid to go to Kodiak on a hunt? Like, I would have laughed. There's no way. So it definitely is pretty surreal, and get to do some really cool opportunities. Last year, went to Colorado and did a super fun mule deer hunt down there for work. This past season, I did my first Colombian blacktail hunt over in Oregon. That was a work content hunt. So, yeah, I mean, personal hunts and work hunts, it's pretty awesome. I get to do some cool stuff, especially when I don't have to take time off, and cover some work boxes as well.
All right, dude. Kodiak blacktail is my dream hunt. How awesome was it?
Kodiak, going into it, it was my first time being in Alaska hunting. And going into it, I was like, you know, it probably wouldn't be my top bucket list Alaska hunt. Like it's gonna be super fun to go to Alaska, check out Kodiak. I heard how wild it was. And I was like, obviously beyond stoked to get up there and do it. I didn't know how fun hunting Sitka blacktail was going to be until I was there. Like it went from being like, okay, I want to go do it to experience it, and then I'll check it off the list. If I go back to Alaska, I'll probably do X, Y, or Z, do something different. To when I was leaving Kodiak, I remember just being on the plane looking at Kodiak as we were leaving, and it's just like, I would love to come back and do this same hunt every single year for the rest of my life. Like it would never get old. It would never be like, oh yeah, it's just, you know, another Kodiak hunt. It was such an amazing place. Just so wild. And like, you start hiking around on Kodiak, and I mean, I do it even here in Montana. I'm looking up at mountains right now that I've been in, and you know, it makes you feel small, but there's something about Kodiak. You start hiking through the brush and seeing giant, you know, brown bear tracks and seeing brown bears and just everything on that island that made you feel so ridiculously small. It was awesome.
If you're ever looking for a plus one, man, I got you. I would love to go.
Yeah, no, I want to get up there again. I think, shoot, that's probably been 3 or 4 years ago now that I was up there and did that. It was cool. We did a boat-based hunt, so we stayed on a boat. I think there was like 8 or 9 of us guys plus the captain. And yeah, it was a blast. Like every morning waking up on the boat to the giant chain link anchor getting pulled up, and then we'd go get on the skiff and go to shore and hunt for the day and come back and eat great food. And not gonna lie, it was kind of nice being on the boat, not having to worry about you know, a giant Kodiak brown bear coming sniffing through our tent in the middle of the night. So that part was kind of cool. Did a little fishing, and yeah, man, it was awesome.
It's like just crazy level of adventure, man. And I think Carter's right. I think there has to be an OnX HLE hunt coming up, and it probably should be out there.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'll Kodiak go to watch, man. I'm just trying to learn to hunt, man. So sitting here listening to this, I'm like, it's mind blowing, like straight mind blowing, dude. Cause you know, I grew up in Colorado. I've been here for 42 years, and in my 43rd year, I'm finally going to go hunting. So I'm that guy. Right. But that's why I'm stoked to kind of be a part of what's going on here. Cause I get to hear these great stories. I get to team up with guys like you and really learn more about, you know, what it takes to go crush some of these ultimate adventures.
Yeah, no, better late than never for sure. I mean, like I said, I hunted Colorado for the very first time last year, and it was awesome. Like it was super cold. It was third season rifle mule deer, and we were at pretty high, like where I shot my buck. I think we're at like 10.2 or 10.3. So camped at pretty high elevation, like froze our butts off. We stayed in a wall tent. Like is one of those where if somebody doesn't wake up in the middle of the night to stoke the fire, you're going to have frost on your sleeping bag in the morning. So that was just another adventure and super cool to come. You know, I've been in Colorado a few different times, but to come there for a hunt and set up a wall tent with a group of awesome guys and endure the crazy cold. Like there was one day, I mean, this was middle of the day, not even at night, where we stopped to glass some mule deer and we all pulled out our packs and stuff. And I went to make a meal or something, like boil some water. And I had a couple of Nalgenes and they were inside my backpack, inside of a puffy to try and keep them warm. And like, it was just frozen solid, like had no water. Cause it was so cold that in my backpack in a puffy, the water had frozen. So just, yeah, being with a good group of guys like that for a little over a week and we all tagged out, like Colorado was a blast. That's another one too. Like I want to go back every couple of years and hunt it. I've got 1 point now because I burned my points on that hunt, but every 2 to 3 years I want to get down to Colorado and check out a new area. And yeah, it was cool. Shot my best mule deer on the last day of the hunt and couldn't have nice. Been any better really.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. I had a great conversation the other day with a guy who's trying to build out kind of a Western hunt 101, right? And I took a whole bunch of guff from him right away when he was like, so wait, how old are you again? And you haven't hunted out there yet? And he's telling me stories left and right. He's from PA. So it's exciting, right, to be able to have this in my backyard, but I'm stoked to kind of take advantage. I if you get out to Colorado, man, love to hook up and tag along for that experience, man.
Yeah, no, absolutely. We'll stay in touch for sure.
So Dylan, what's 2024 looking like from a Dylan perspective and an OnX perspective?
Yeah, 24. I'm actually trying to figure that out myself right now. So that's a good question. So mid-January, a lot of applications are due. Non-resident elk in Wyoming is one of those right around the corner. Really should have my mind made up if I'm going to cash in my points and do it this year or not. A couple of weeks out, but still don't know. So might potentially be going to Alaska. There's a couple things in the works for a caribou hunt. Nothing set in stone yet, but that one would be super cool. That'd be an archery caribou hunt in, I think, August, which would be really cool because it doesn't overlap with any of my personal hunts, my elk hunts or anything in Montana. Obviously Alaska is awesome. Taking a bow up there would be pretty cool and hunting caribou. Wyoming elk is kind of the other one. And again, like I said, I've got multiple points in some different states for different species. I've got 6 elk points in Wyoming, so I should be able to draw, a general tag with that. They made a lot of changes this year as far as their different zones and stuff, but should still be able to pull a general tag with that. It's like one of those. I don't ever want to plan too much in 1 year. Cause I know a few other opportunities will probably pop up like later in the year. And so it's like, okay, I'm trying to think objectively about it. Like if I decide to go, if the Alaska thing works out and I can go to Alaska in August, then September and October and November, I've got a lot of hunts here in Montana for my personal stuff. Like, do I have time to effectively do Wyoming? Or, you know, I've built 6 years of points. am I going to potentially draw Wyoming and then not have enough time to like really take advantage and put a cool hunt together? Cause that's one thing I don't want to do, you know, waste 6 years of points and all that time and then, you know, kind of half ass it or anything like that. So trying to figure that out right now, but probably one of the two, either Alaska or Wyoming. And then, you never know. A few other things popped up. Like last year, I tried to draw an elk tag in Oregon. Didn't work out. And they've got an over-the-counter opportunity for Colombian blacktail. So it's like, well, we're already invested in Oregon for a few hundred bucks to try and get that elk tag. It didn't pan out. What can we do over-the-counter? And so just went and picked up a blacktail tag and went and hunted over there with the born and raised crew that we work with. And yeah, so there's always some really cool opportunities like over-the-counter stuff. Last minute as well, but it's I feel like I should know what my plan is this year, but still a little bit up in the air. What about you guys though?
Before I tell you my plan, Justin, Dylan just hit you with the best gold nugget, a seasoned veteran of advice right there. Don't overbook your fall because opportunities will show up. It took me a long time. Yeah, get your pen, write that down.
I'm not making any plans because you guys are making them all for me right now. So I'm set. It's my job to get in shape and just have the gear. That's how I look at it.
Yeah, that's the truth, man. I think I overextended last fall. Went on my first elk hunt in Colorado, and then we went on an antelope hunt in Wyoming, and I think with the family back here in Georgia, it was, and all the whitetail hunting and stuff I want to do here, you know, I think it was a bit much for everybody involved, but.
Like you guys went back to back, didn't you? I mean,
yeah. My wife was a champ.
That's what I've learned too, is just to spread it out a little bit. So here in like 2 weeks, exactly 2 weeks, my dad and I are going to Texas for an oddad hunt. And so super excited about that. And it was one of those when we were talking to the guy we're meeting up with down there, it's like, yeah, the best time to come is October in the middle of the rut for oddad. I was like, man, I've got so much stuff going on in October. Like, elk hunts, if I haven't shot a bull yet, I'm still hunting elk. Antelope hunts, yep. I had an antelope hunt in October in Montana this year. Deer hunting starts in Montana. I was like, if I'm going to go do that, because oddad is a species you can hunt year-round. There's not like a season on them down there anyway. So I was like, if I'm going to go do that, I'm going to go in January or February. Like, yeah, the hunting might not be quite as good. It's not peak rut. Like, you know, it's not going to be as good technically. But if I can go in January when I have nothing else going on, like, again, yeah, I could hunt lions or wolves around here, and I do that here or there. But for the most part, outside of some work travel and in early, I guess, in the middle of winter, I don't have a whole lot of personal hunting trips. So it's like, yeah, I'm gonna go in January, and we'll sacrifice a little bit, you know, quality of a hunt to go in a time of year where I'm not going to feel like super stressed out about being gone for a week.
It's a good strategy. And you're hunting, right? You're getting away from the negative 40 and you're hunting.
Yep. Yeah, it's cool to mix it up because, I mean, again, outside of lion and wolves or predator hunting, coyote hunting here in Montana, I'm not a big duck hunter myself. I mean, I go when I'm invited and always have a blast, but it's just not one of my main passions of hunting. And so, I mean, typically this time of year, I would be dreaming of September and bugling bulls, which I still am, but also here in a couple of weeks have a really cool hunt and brand new adventure that I've never done coming up. So something to look forward to in the off season is pretty cool.
It's awesome.
Yeah, I've got 6 elk points in Wyoming too, and I'm in the same headspace you are, man. I'm like, I should have this locked in. I should know. Like, we're getting, what is it, the 16th? Like, I should have this figured out, but like, that's 6 years of my life, and I want to be able to dedicate, like you were saying, enough time to the hunt to be a success. I've never killed an elk, and I covet that so badly. Like, I want it so bad.
Yeah.
You know, you just want to play it the best way possible.
Totally. Yeah, no, I mean, I grew up in Montana where you can elk hunt every year, and I honestly feel felt the same way about elk for forever. I mean, it took me a long time and it was a super long learning curve. Super long learning curve to finally get it done on elk. And then just build off of that and keep it like keep the momentum rolling. But 6 points in Wyoming, like even with the regular outside of the special draw, you should be able to pull a general, which is nice. Save you about $1,400.
Yeah, no kidding, man. It's getting wild out there for non-residents.
Yeah, no, it is for sure. They changed it this year, so a regular outside of a special is still, I believe, $700-some. Don't quote me on that. And then the special is almost $2,000 now. So pretty crazy the difference.
Yeah, dude, that's wild. And, you know, just looking over your Instagram, Dylan, you are an incredibly successful hunter, man. So what would you suggest to Justin across species, right? You said duck hunting's not your thing. What do you think would be a good entry level hunt for Justin to get his toes wet in the big game Western hunting world?
Yeah, I like that's a good question, whether it be for you personally or anybody, like that's a great question. And a couple that I would recommend, like spring bear, if you're into bear hunting, some people it's not their thing. If you are into bear hunting, like spring is such a good time to be out in the mountains. Like it's so cool. Spring bear hunting is cool. Cause like here in Montana, we can't bait, we can run hounds, but I don't personally know anybody that does it. It's all spot and stock. So you're getting in a lot of the elements of like a mule deer hunt or another big game hunt. And it's springtime. You don't got much else going on. And, there's plenty of bears to be found if you're willing to hike a little bit and sit in glass for, you know, hours on end. It's a super cool hunt. So spring bear also too, it's like the barrier of entry is super low. I believe for non-resident, it's under $300 all in on a bear tag. So it's relatively inexpensive compared to elk, deer, anything else. And then, another one is I would start building points for antelope. So antelope is one of those hunts where if you're not extremely picky looking for a very specific caliber of buck, I mean, if you come out to Montana and hunt a unit with pretty good amount of public land, like you should be able to fill an antelope tag. You know, you're going to see a bunch of them. You can cruise around and glass even from the pickup, you know, find some antelope on public land and go make a stock and super fun hunt. They're super, super cool animal. I shot one of my better bucks this past year and kind of one of those things, again, growing up in Montana, I was able to get an antelope tag every single year until it's been 5 or 6 years ago, but the draw odds drastically declined on them. They had a couple rough winters where really hurt the antelope population. And thankfully the state of Montana stepped in and said, we're not going to give the same number of tags out with the herds in bad shape. So it went from growing up every single year hunting antelope to probably every 2 to 3 years, I should be able to draw a tag now, depending on what unit you're hunting. Some units obviously are a lot more, but it's just a super fun hunt, like really cool animal. You get on a lot of stalks, you get to look at a lot of antelope. And as a non-resident or a new hunter, I would say that opportunity wise, it's pretty tough to beat.
I like the idea of that spring bear because I love spring here in Colorado, man. Like I get out, my background's fishing, right, man. So like, I can't wait till spring, but I would love the opportunity to get out and do something like that. And like, when you're talking about a, you know, spot and stock and glassing and sitting in the hills all day, man, during spring, I'd be all for that, man. Even if I didn't get a chance, you know, either way. So I'm going to look into that one, man, because for a $300 all in to kind of get started there, that seems like a pretty low barrier of entry for an opportunity in the springtime out here.
Yeah, it's fun. I mean, bear hunting is one of those things, especially all I can really speak to is, I guess I've hunted a few other states. I've hunted Idaho and Washington for bear as well, and shot bears in both of those states. But it's fun because it is a challenge. Like, if you're going out antelope hunting, to contrast, like you should be able to find antelope every day. Like if you went a day without seeing an antelope, it'd be pretty surprising. At least in the areas that I typically hunt, if not, you know, 50 or 100 antelope in a day. just depending on the day and how everything's going. But like bear, you know, we've had some nights where you're seeing 8 to 10 bears a night, but you might be seeing them, but they're a long ways off. And out of those 8 bears, and that's a really, really good night. That's pretty uncommon. But for example, out of those 8 bears you spot on one of those amazing nights where you're just seeing bears everywhere, there might be one or two that you can make a play on and actually go after and have a chance of getting within range and making it happen. So, I mean, more nights than I can count, more days than I can count, you know, you spend behind glass and hiking all day and don't see a bear. They're there. But they're a tough animal to pick out and to make happen. So it's a challenging hunt, and because it's challenging, it's super rewarding as well. So it's up there on my list for sure.
So would you rank Colorado kind of in the top couple spots as a, you know, a spot to go after a bear? Or, I mean, you're talking about you get to go to Kodiak and all that stuff too. So like, where does Colorado rank for you if you're going bear hunting?
Honestly, I do not have much expertise with Colorado and bear hunting. I'm not sure how that season is even like structurally laid out. So Montana, you know, my home state is pretty much where I'm used to bear hunting. And I've hunted Idaho a couple of times, hunted Washington once. Both those are great places as well. But yeah, to be honest, I'm not really sure how Colorado bear is laid out, if that's an over-the-counter or what the seasons are like there. I should look into it though.
Yeah, no, after this, I'm going to have to. So I'll report back.
Yeah. And it's probably a lot cheaper there for residents. I don't know, but like, you know, when I say under $300, you could come to Montana and do it. That's as a non-resident. Like for me, it's less than a $20 tag on top of all my other stuff. So it's pretty darn cheap for residents.
Out of all the species that you get to hunt consistently, you know, your mule deer and now your blacktail and your whitetail and your elk and your antelope, what's the one that really gets you going, man? Which one gets you the most fired up?
Yeah, for me, archery wise is definitely elk. Like you cannot be screaming bulls in September. It's just, if I had to pick, I think that's what I'd probably pick. My second is mule deer in the rut. So like, you know, again, in Montana, we're fortunate we can hunt, with a general tag mule deer all the way through November. So we get that rut hunt. Colorado, that hunt we did last year was third season. So that was during the rut as well, but, mule deer and elk, and you know, I've done some cool hunts, some other species, but those two are pretty tough to beat, like outside of the bucket list items, right? Like I someday would dream of hunting like doll sheep or something, or a giant moose in Alaska. But outside of that, like for the ones that I've done, elk with a bow in my hand or mule deer during the rut are my two favorites.
Yeah, I tell everybody who will listen, I'm totally obsessed with mule deer now, man. I've only killed two. And one of them was a little forky in your state, and totally obsessed, man. They're just like the coolest. Like I'm just staring at the one over your shoulder, man. Just totally obsessed with them.
Yeah, no, it's super cool. It'll be interesting to see long term, like if Montana continues to hunt them in the rut with the general season. I feel like Montana is one of those states we're more of like an opportunity state than a quality state for management. And it'll just be interesting to see if that changes in the future, just with the numbers dwindling a little bit and having a couple of tough seasons. It's pretty crazy that we can hunt them all the way through November with a rifle and a general tag. Obviously I love doing it, but wouldn't be opposed to some changes in the future to, you know, maybe have to draw for that particular hunt the last couple of weeks or something of that nature.
It's a lot of pressure for a species, man. And I'm, you know, admittedly part of the problem probably as a non-resident who came in and then shot a forky on the last day, you know, hunted hard for the entire week and just saw a ton of deer, saw over 100 deer, couldn't find any bucks and shot a forky in the last, literally the ninth inning, ended up missing my flight. and pulled the trigger on that Forky. And the reason I did it is that tag was $800 for a non-resident, and you know, I wanted to go home with something. And with that kind of thinking leads to, you know, like you said, an opportunity state with diminished deer population and herds, and you know, probably not as large and healthy and as good of genetics as possible. So there's a lot to consider there for sure.
Yeah, no, it's interesting, especially when you look into how other states manage and just the differences from state line of how they manage their populations and their tags and whatever. And like, I certainly don't fault you for shooting a buck on the last day. $800 tag is super expensive. You hunted your butt off. And like, so I totally understand, you know, the urge to do that on the last day, and don't fault anybody who does that. You know, especially if they're happy with whatever they're pulling the trigger on, that's the main thing. But, it's crazy looking at other states for management. Colorado, again, was my first experience there, and really outside of Montana and Colorado, I haven't hunted mule deer in any other state. So, it was crazy going down to Colorado. 'Cause again, like we had third season. So I think we had, was it six or seven days. And that's like, you can start hunting this day, you end hunting this day, and that is it. Montana, you know, with your general, you can come out for more than a month. I think it's like 5 or 6 weeks and hunt deer. So it is pretty interesting looking at the differences and nuances from state to state. I don't think any state really has it all figured out, but a blend of, well, Colorado does this and that's nice, and Idaho does this and that's nice. It'd be kind of nice to cherry pick and figure out what works best.
For sure, man. And oftentimes I think the decisions made are not always made what's best for the species and the population, right? Sometimes it's profit driven.
I think we might have lost you again there, Carter.
Oh, I said, sometimes, you know, the best decision is not always what's best for the species or the population, but profit driven.
Yeah, I would say more often than not, probably.
Yeah, that's too bad, man. But cool. Well, you know, switching gears a little bit, Dylan, can we talk a little bit about the amazing app that you work for?
Yeah. Got any questions? Fire them away.
Dude, all right. What do you love about it? What's your favorite?
Honestly, there's so much. Yeah. There's so much to it. The one thing I really like about it is a huge up level. Like it really, really aids in people's success, but how I'm going to go about using it and how you two might use it are completely different. So it's not like it automatically just up levels all of the playing field to the same level. You really have to get in there and learn how to read a map and understand, you know, okay, what do elk do this time of day and how can I correlate that to the map? So we give the tools to help folks be successful and put themselves in the right spots. But it's still on everybody to use the tools effectively and to have that knowledge and really the hunting background and knowledge to, again, figure out, okay, you know, where's that elk herd going to be this time of day? Where can I best set up for this evening based on the conditions and everything else around? So there's just so much to it. Like the obvious reason for pretty much anybody to first buy the app and get into it is private public boundaries, game management units. Like, is it legal where I'm at? Can I cross this fence line? Can I not? Is that private? Is it public? Like, I mean, out here in Montana, as you're well aware of now, Carter, like there's so many areas that aren't fenced. There's no sign saying private or public. You it's up to you to know. And then with the app, like you can look and say, okay, 5 yards in front of us, it changes from state land to private land. There's no fence, there's no signs or anything. But if you cross that invisible boundary onto private, you're now trespassing. So,
yeah, I mean, that's,
that's like the obvious reason for most people to get it. But then the tool set and the features that go beyond that are really, I think, what are super useful. Like our new compass mode, for example. I don't know if you've played around with that much, but super cool new feature. where if I, let's just say Spring Bear, since we were talking about that, so many times it, in the past, like thinking back to several times, like you'll see a bear or even shoot a bear across a canyon and then be like, oh, sweet, let's just, you know, hike down to the bottom of this drainage, back up and, you know, either get on them or go recover this bear that we just shot across canyon. Then you get over there and you're looking around at each other like, man, I don't know if we're 5 feet from this bear or, you know, 500 yards. Like everything looks different. You have no idea where you're at. It's so easy to look across a drainage and say like, oh yeah, it's just by that tree. Let's go. And then you get over there and have no idea. So for example, with the new compass mode feature, you can pull out your rangefinder and range. Let's just say, you know, you ranged exactly where that bear dropped and it was whatever, 543 yards. And then you pull out compass mode and you go to the rangefinder tool, you line your phone up in the direction that was, go to 543, bam, mark a waypoint. Now you've got a waypoint that's within feet or a few yards at most, if you're doing it precisely. And now you've got a point on the map that you can see your location, see where that waypoint is, and now you've got a starting point. So when you do get over there, it's like, man, I don't know if it was this tree or that tree another 100 yards up the hill from me. You can just look at your phone, look at the waypoint, and go to that. And it's a really good starting point. So like, that's one example of a newer feature that is just an absolute game changer.
Yeah. I love how innovative Onyx is as a whole, always growing, always adapting new features every year. Like you said, I remember in 2018 was my first Western hunt and I bought the chip, right? And now it's so outdated. It's like hilarious, right? Which like arguably was not that long ago. And so you guys have done a really good job staying on top of and up to date and modern with it. You know, could you talk a little, you mentioned it a little bit, but could you talk about how maybe Justin and I could use, or how people use the mapping system differently, right? For different types of hunters, like maybe like from a beginner point of view to a, you know, more seasoned hunter, right? Because like if you can't read a topo map, then that the topo lines aren't going to help you, like you mentioned.
That's where I was going to like step in, is like the way that I would use it, the way that you use it are vastly different, right? And some of the things that I'd love you to touch on too, Dylan, are, you know, the master class and the office hours, man, because I think that's something else that you guys do that's like next level, is you help everybody understand how to use the tool that you've given them that they've paid for, right? So yeah, definitely. Yeah. Just tagging on to that question.
For sure. And yeah, I mean, I realize like I'm in it pretty much every day, if not every day, like it's my work. I'm also really passionate about hunting and I think about it 24/7, 365. And we realize a lot of our customers, a vast majority of our customers are not that way. They might, you know, pick up a deer license and go hunt for an extended weekend one time a year, right? So a lot of our customers are that type of folk as well. And they're probably not, you know, in January figuring out, like studying the map, trying to figure out where they're going to hunt this next year. It is a super complex product. A lot of people are afraid of the technology. They, you know, think that they're not going to be able to understand it. That's where those office hours and some of the webinars do come in. So I'm glad you touched on that. Basically, it's a webinar program that we offer. The office hours is pretty much just to ask questions about the product and to go through the product. So folks can find those on our website. If you just type in Onyx Hunt webinars, we've got a page set up where you can go through and sign up for different ones. We just did one. I did one about a week ago with our good partners over at Hunt and Fool, talking specifically about Wyoming non-resident elk changes, like what's coming, like as a non-resident, what do I need to know? What has changed this year, et cetera. So it really varies all the way from next week. We have one about shed hunting coming up. So I'm going to work with some really good ambassadors of ours who get after it during shed hunting on that one, all the way back to the fundamentals and basics of the product. So again, I'd say check those out, like get signed up, especially if you're new to the app or not even new to the app, because I would say, you know, just kind of throwing numbers out here, I don't have anything to back this up, but I would say 80% of our customer base uses 10% or less of the app's functionality capability. You know, a lot of people have marked a couple of waypoints and that's about it. So they, the compass mode that I was just talking to about remotely and accurately and quickly marking a precise distance and dropping a waypoint on a specific object at a known distance. Like, most people have never looked at that. They have no idea it even exists because, you know, a lot of different folks are pulling out the app and saying, yep, I'm on public, or, you know, let's take a turn right up here and then we'll get to our campground, and then, you know, put the app in their, put the phone back in their pocket until they need to check a boundary again. So there's just so much detail and layers, especially you look at the data that we provide, like historic wildfire layers or roadless area layers or the MVUM to see what roads are open at what time of year. There's so much that goes into it. Crop layers, historic imagery, where you can see like two-week increments imagery back all the way for a year. There's a lot to unpack, and those office hours are a really good spot to start.
I was going to say that was probably the biggest barrier of entry when I first got it, right? Was really quickly I realized just how robust the tool was, right? And so I was like, holy crap, where do I start? So I got to just applaud you guys for the office hours and those classes, right? Because it's helped guys like me and my cousin, who's also a newbie hunter, use the tool to, we're probably like more like your 20% capacity goal to get to like 50%, right? But that, I mean, the tool is just so robust that it's great that you offer that for all of us to be able to finally understand and how to, and use it for what it really is.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And I, one of the things that I always tell people, and it really, you know, I've been saying this for 8 years and it really still holds true, is I recommend people just spending time in it. Like, if you're at home on your couch and not much is going on, you don't like the show that's on or whatever, like, pull out your phone, like, touch every button. You're not going to break it. The worst that's going to happen is you're going to remove some information, some data from the map that you can always just turn it right back on. So, that's always my feedback is, you know, those office hours are great. Call our customer service. There's a lot of tutorials and just helpful information on YouTube that we put out. But if you spend even just 30 minutes and just go through and turn layers off, turn them back on, see what that does to your map, like drop waypoints, edit waypoints, add photos to your waypoint, change the color, add notes, like just poke around and touch every button in the app. Like, that's probably going to be the best way to become a little bit more efficient with it.
You can add photos to your waypoints?
Yeah. Old news.
No See? Way.
I mean, that's a good example.
What the hell, man?
But that's a great example of, you know, you're very efficient in the app, and there's always things within there that people just aren't utilizing. So yeah, I mean, photos, there's a lot of different use cases. Like, if I shoot an elk and drop a waypoint where that harvest was, like, I'll drop a, you know, harvest photo in there with some notes, whatever. Elk wallow, for example. So I can have 50 different waypoints of elk wallows, but then 2 years go by and I'm like, man, what was that wallow like? Like, I'm thinking about hunting that same area again. Now I just tap on the waypoint of the wallow and there's a photo of, you know, exactly what that wallow and what that opening looked like. So tons of different use cases for that, like glassing points. I've been doing that a lot lately. Bear hunting, for example, like, you'll get up to a glassing point and either like it or not really like it, depending on what you can or can't see from there. And so I've been dropping waypoints for those, and then I'll just pull out my phone, hit add photo, and then take a picture from the glassing point. So that way, you know, I can reference that in the future if I want to go back there, or if you guys are coming out to Montana, I can send you that waypoint and say, hey, here's a waypoint. It automatically drops into your phone, and now all you do is tap it and scroll down, and you can see exactly what your view from that glassing point is going to look like. You can then look and be like, ah, I don't really like it, can't really see anything, or what you can see is going to be outside of a shooting distance. A lot of different things there. So I could add notes to it. Like, I could put detailed notes for any particular waypoint, and then when I share it with you, you guys have all those notes as well. So lots of different use cases there.
Yeah, that's an awesome feature, man.
And I love also like just the versatility, like even if you're not, you know, hunting X amount of days a year or fishing or whatever. I just used it yesterday to go show my mom a house down the road that was for sale. And we were just looking, I was showing her the property lines and how it backed up to the lake here, and Army Corps of Engineer property was all outlined and blah, blah, blah. Anyways, I was explaining it all to her and she was like, "This is amazing." I was like, "I know, right? This is incredible." And she's never been hunting in her entire life. And she was like, "That tells you who owns all these properties and where everything is." I'm like, "Right? It's incredible." Do you ever think about, like, you probably do, but like people just used to trespass, right? Like before anything like this, on accident, sometimes unintentionally, but like it takes the guesswork out of it.
Yeah, I mean, it really keeps people honest for sure. I mean, I know before this tool, like, you know, when I was super young, a lot of, and it used to not be as big of a deal, and I can only really speak for the areas that I'm familiar with, but I think people sometimes also used it as a crutch. Like, I don't know if that's private or public, so I'm going to just, it looks like public to me, right? And then they go do what they want to do. But now, like, there's no excuse, you know, for, you know, $30 a year for one state, like for whatever state you're in it, or $100 a year for all 50 Canada and, you know, the whole suite of elite benefits there. Like there's no way that you can't find that information. So I think it's keeping a lot of people more honest than what it did prior to this product.
Yeah. And that's massive, man. That's doing good for the hunting community as a whole, right? When sometimes the hunting community is looked at through a microscope lens, I think that's really important, the honesty portion and having good intentions and ethics, which is another thing I like about your company too. Can you talk a little bit about how Onyx is involved in various conservation efforts?
Yeah, we work with some of the best, if not the best in the business, I would say the best in the business. I mean, we work with so many different orgs and groups, and we internally have dedicated folks who their main job is to look at access related issues and what we as a company can help shed light on, put some of our dollars where our mouth is and open up access. So again, we do a lot of that internally. We've got some dedicated positions for that specifically. And then, you know, I'm wearing a Elk Foundation's hat. We work with RMEF. We work with Turkey. We work with Mule Deer Foundation. We work with a lot of really, really good organizations that are boots on the ground and money behind the wallet to help open up some opportunities and increase habitat, whether it be for a specific species and then other species benefit because of that. Yeah, it's been pretty cool to work with those organizations and see kind of how they tick and how they go about their business and being a part of it.
Yeah, I love that, man. Putting your money where your mouth is and doing good things for people who believe in the product. It's one more reason to stand behind it. It's not only the single greatest app ever invented, but also doing good work out there for, you know, people like us to keep enjoying what we're doing, man. It's awesome.
Yeah, no, it's been good. And like I said, you know, starting out in this conversation, it's crazy to see how far we've gone and how big of changes have happened in the past 8.5 to 9 years that I've been with the company, of everybody being on the chip product and then the app coming out. A lot of folks, even at the time, didn't have smartphones. Now it's pretty much like everybody's walking around with a smartphone in their pocket, and downloading an app is just kind of second nature now. So it's pretty cool to see the technology advancements and then able to all the way to like what we're able to do with that. So we've increased our customer base, you know, a huge amount. And then again, putting some of those dollars back to conservation and access specifically is a key one for us. At the end of the day, if we can't access public lands, if we can't access lands, not only does it put us out of business, but man, that'd be a miserable world. So that's one of our key initiatives here is access.
That's awesome, man. And I know we're rolling up on an hour here, but, you know, Dylan, what would you say to people who use other mapping systems? You know, what are some of your favorite unique features or innovations that OnX uses that kind of sets you guys apart? You know, I love the offline maps, right? That's life changing for me as a non-resident. But you know, what are some of your favorites?
Yeah, I got
you. Lose me again.
You cut out again at the end of that.
Lost
you a little bit, but I got the gist in the question. Honestly, like we do have some great competitors. Like the main thing that I would say is like OnX was kind of the first one to the game. We've been doing this for a very, very long time. We have a really, really solid group of folks over here that have made the product to where it just works. Like I can rely on it out in the field. And to me, that's one of the most important things. You know, early on in the stages of the app, I remember a time where, you know, it was a little bit more buggy and technology wasn't quite there. And with the advancements of technology and the team and the money that we put into the product to make it stable, I mean, it works and it doesn't let you down. So to me, like the reliability, like, yeah, we could dive into dozens and dozens of features and offline maps and this and that, a lot of which other folks out there are also doing. But the reliability and usability of it are, I think, kind of what sets us apart.
I think that's a great answer, dude, because the reliability is the first thing I noticed about it when I was tracking around, you know, up in the hills over here and using it when I was fishing and things like that. So I think that's, you know, the reliability is key.
Yeah. I mean, it has to work. Like there's, especially like you invest a lot of time, money, effort, but like from a safety side of it too, like I have relied solely on the app in the dark before with a headlamp and nothing but a track to follow or a destination on my phone. And like, yes, you should be well-versed on compass and, you know, the ability to land nav without anything, should your phone fail or should you lose it or whatever, but, safety and just everything, you know, you put a lot of money, time and effort into whatever you're doing. And it's just one of those tools that has to work. I mean, if you're going on a rifle hunt and you get all the way to the end of your hunt and you go to squeeze the trigger and your gun doesn't work, like there's just certain pieces of gear that have to work. And in our opinion, like the phone and the mapping system is one of those. So that's one of the things that we strive for. And that's one of the most important things. Like we will always continue to add new features, new, cool, innovative, you know, 3D, cool, like crazy things you can do on the map that blow people's mind. But at the end of the day, like our core is just a product that is reliable and works. And like that's more important than the flashy features.
And that's the key, man. And it's mandatory. You got to have it, whether you're hunting in your home state or you're hunting out of state, man. You got to have it. OnX is unbelievable, man. Not to blow too much smoke, but it's freaking, like you said, like what's the point of, you know, don't even take your rifle, right? Like you got to have it, man. You know, for any type of hunting you're doing. So we're huge fans, man, and appreciate the work you guys are doing. You know, we're rolling up on an hour here, but, you know, Dylan, totally off topic, but what are some of your favorite recipes? What are your go-to recipes currently for some of this, all this wild game you got in your freezer right now?
That's a good question. Honestly, I don't know. It's a good question because it's unique. I don't know if I've been asked that before. We're very fortunate and have a very, very full freezer. So I shot a bull last year. So I got my elk, two deer. My wife shot a deer and an antelope. And we had some leftover out from the previous year. Like we have a very full freezer. Honestly, I keep it pretty simple, man. Like I'm a big like steak and potatoes guy, and pulling out some backstrap, lightly seasoning it and making sure it's medium rare. It's one of the biggest things I think people screw up with wild game specifically is, it's like, oh, it's wild game. And I'm referring to family members and friends who don't hunt much. But a lot of people, I think, look at wild game and it's like, because it's wild game, it has to be cooked longer. Not the case unless you're dealing with like bear or mountain lion or something like that. But, you know, they overcook it and then it starts to get gamey. So it's like barely cook that thing. And that's kind of my go-to is just like simple steak. You know, we do a lot of burger and steak. So like out of my elk will be strictly burger, steak and roast. And then my deer and antelope is where we'll do like summer sausage, jerky, pepperoni sticks, bratwurst, that type of stuff. So, yeah, man, we're pretty set on meat this year. And actually it was cool because, my wife wasn't going to shoot a deer this year. We get a deer tag every year for her, and she wasn't going to shoot one this year. Cause it was like, man, we've got so much meat. And she's like, I don't want to just shoot a deer just to shoot it if we're not going to eat it. Right. And her parents overheard that conversation when we were at their house visiting, and they were like, we would love some deer meat to know like where the meat came from and whatever. So it's like, sweet. So she went out, shot a great buck, and we gave all that meat to her parents and to their family. So it's cool to extend that. And it's just cool, like, you know, not needing to go to the grocery store to buy red meat and pulling it out of the freezer and knowing exactly like, okay, my hands are the only hands that have touched that meat from the field. I know it was a clean, ethical shot to taking care of it properly in the field, to taking care of the meat at home, putting it in my freezer, now pulling it out and eating it as a family. Actually just the other night, it was a pretty cool moment. Like my son, 2.5 years old, we were eating some steak or whatever, and he was eating it, and he turned around and pointed to my bowl on the wall, and he's like he made the connection himself. And you know, we tell him before that's like why we hunt, what we do, but he like randomly made the connection of like, that elk is what we're eating right now. And he was just super pumped about it. It was like, it was just a really cool moment.
That's awesome.
That's the best. That's the best, dude. I love it. Well, I'll have to shoot you a message after you kill that Awdad, man. I want to know what that tastes like.
Lost you again for a sec there, Carter.
Good. Good. I wanted you to lose me. I said, I'll have to shoot you a message once you kill that Awdad and let me know what it tastes like.
Yeah, I've heard mixed reviews on it. I've heard, you know, if you cook it, whatever, it's not bad. I've definitely heard mixed reviews. But, you know, I've heard that also about bear and lion and antelope. I mean, growing up, I had this false sense of antelope just don't taste good. And antelope's like one of my favorite meats ever. You just got to take care of it right away and be diligent with it. And I love eating antelope. So, yeah, it'll be, I'm also curious on that as well. I'll let you know.
Awesome.
Cool, man. Justin, you got any closing thoughts for us, man?
Oh, I got one, man. I think we'd be remiss not to thank Dylan and the Onyx crew for their support over here at HLE, man. Like, you guys jumped in early on as a great partner here. And, you know, I know from my end, for sure, I want to thank you guys. And I know we got a bunch of members that are pretty happy with you as well. So we appreciate you guys, you know, supporting what we're doing over here. And we're happy to support you guys and what you're doing. So, you know, thank you.
Yeah, no, we appreciate the opportunity and the relationship, and looking forward to not only this next year, but years to come and building it. So, yeah, thank you guys for having me on. I appreciate the conversation and catching up and everything that you guys are doing over there.
Yeah, dude, let's stay in contact, survive expo season, and love to get on a hunt together sometime.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll stay in touch. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Dylan.
Thanks, man.